It was made a lifeline. The cell thing was expanded.
All right, is this everybody here?
I think that they had even done cells.
I think I have yours here, Jerry.
Under Bush.
Prepared by Jerry Lane, yep. Okay. All right, Daryl, we doing our thing?
Okay, thank you.
Are you recording? Okay.
I do, yeah. Thank you.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is, once again, Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for an informal today on case number PU 13-755, Ottertail Power Company's 2004 transmission facility cost recovery rates. It's approximately 2 p.m. I don't have any opening comments, but I would be certainly happy to open up to my colleagues, and then we'll go around the table and get everybody's name for the record.
I have no opening comments. Thank you.
I don't have opening comments either.
Okay. Let's, Jerry, if you could identify yourself and then work around to the company.
Jerry Lynn with staff.
Stuart Tomerdahl, Manager Regulatory Administration with Ottertail Power.
Thank you, Stuart.
Michael Reaver, Ottertail Power as well, transmission delivery.
Okay. Okay. I don't think we have anything else to cover, so let's get right into it. I don't know if Stuart or Mike, whoever has the lead, is your nickel.
I'll tee it up here, and again, thank you for allowing us to be here this afternoon. Again, my name is Stuart Tomerdahl with Ottertail Power. In consulting with Jerry, he had indicated that he would like us to put together kind of an overview of the transmission projects that we currently have in our transmission rider. The docket before you is actually our second update to the transmission rider, and he indicated it felt that we thought it would be good to really orientate you to the projects and the activities that are currently going on from a transmission perspective. So Michael will be leading us through the primary project overviews, and I think one of the key things that you'll see as we go through this today is that there is a significant amount of investment going on in our region that's going to yield benefits to North Dakota ratepayers, but at a relatively small cost relative to the investment. So I'll turn it over to Michael, and we'll move on from there.
Thanks, Stuart. I work in our transmission studies group. Went to NDSU for a few years, actually studied at a two-year school for a couple years, and then went to NDSU. So
sometimes that's the best place to stop with the chairman. I'm good right there.
Need to vote right now. Let's do a quick vote right now.
Well, if I can figure out this clicker here, then we'll just get started. So Stuart kind of went through a little bit of an overview, but basically want to run through the projects, kind of give a project description, status update, kind of the revenue requirements through 2014, and a little bit on how they're shared through MISO as well.
Michael, I just have a quick general orientation question. How do you work with Joanne? How do you share information back and forth? Because I talk with her a lot about transmission. And so how does your group work with her group?
Yeah, anytime there's a MISO stakeholder groups, Joanne's certainly the point person or contact person. She's very involved in BPM tariff discussions and things like that with MISO. So I guess we would kind of be the subject matter expert and rely on her expertise for kind of some policy guidance, if you will.
Okay, so you're more the how you're going to build it and how you can do those things, or I'm still trying to...
Yeah, right, the deep into the study details.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
And when does the pass-off occur, or does it never really occur? It's always constant flow back and forth of information.
Yeah, I would say it's hand-in-hand more than a pass-off.
All right, thank you.
And then after we get through these projects here, we'll kind of touch base on the mechanism summary for the rider, and then there's our filing request recap. So like Stuart said, a lot of different transmission projects going on right now. So what's really driving these projects? You know, first and foremost, we want to have a reliable system. So maintaining reliability is certainly of great importance. These projects also help increase market efficiency. So a more efficient system is always beneficial. These projects also support current and future generation development, such as wind, of course, but they also support a variety of generation policies. And I guess what I mean by that is wind, of course, is being helped by transmission, but some of these transmission lines have been developed with the idea of having a natural gas plant near some of the facilities. So they're sited appropriately next to natural gas infrastructure as well.
Can I ask you a question about that one, Michael?
This go ahead. Yep.
Slide. If you were to describe to, like, the average customer what you mean by increased market efficiency?
Sure. So if we, generate a megawatt of power or a kilowatt hour for a customer, to get that kilowatt hour to the meter, it'll maybe take a little bit more than that because our system loses energy as it flows from power plant to customer. And the more wire transmission facilities that are built, the less we have to produce to actually get to the customer. Mm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
This slide is kind of just a summary of the projects throughout this presentation. As we kind of go through this table, I won't go in great detail here, but just to kind of orient, we have kind of given a project number to each of them, of course, their name, a little bit about the MISO cost-sharing status, also what their project type is. Each MISO project is given a type, reliability, generation interconnection, stuff like that. The total project cost, and then also the estimated 2014 revenue requirement for North Dakota.
Is that number the percentage the same for each project, or is each one different based on where it sits in the grid?
The number...
The North Dakota revenue requirement, I can't figure the math out that quick in my head. I mean...
Sure. Well, it's going to depend on how it's shared through MISO, for one, and each of these projects are shared through MISO differently.
Is there any discussion or disagreement on how you figure out the North Dakota share in all these projects?
I think that's pretty straightforward based on a load share, but I'll maybe pass it to Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, the costs that get assigned to the retail customers are based on the load share, you know, for Otter Tail within the load zone, within the pricing zone, and what's allocated to North Dakota is just based on our jurisdictional allocations.
Fair enough. Thanks.
The first 1 through 11 are previously approved projects and in the rider, so they may look familiar. Project number 12 is one that we're looking for approval for in 2014, and then 13 and 14 are not part of this approval or seeking approval, but potentially in the future. Kind of a FYI type of information there. And like Stuart said in the intro, there's a, by looking at the project costs, a lot of investment in a large dollar amount, but relatively small dollar amount in compared to the total project cost to the North Dakota ratepayers. Kind of tandem to the last slide, this also shows projects 1 through 11, not project 12, 13, or 14, but it kind of just shows their geographic location in regards to kind of a three-state area here. And if you were to kind of outline the Otter Tail service territory over this map, it's going to generally hit every boundary of our system. So these projects are certainly spread out throughout the Otter Tail system. And as you can see through the different lines, and I should clarify, each of the colors represent a different voltage level, a KV level, kind of the size of the wire. Blue is our kind of a 230 KV line. Red is a 345 KV line. Dotted red lines are some of the DC lines. Some of the lighter gray lines are 115. But as you can see, it's a very interconnected system. Each project interplays with each other, and the projects as a whole increase reliability. Kind of that intro slide definitely promote kind of the west-to-east transfers and also improve market efficiency. I'll go in more detail on each of these projects here in the upcoming slides. Are there any questions, I guess, on this map or slide?
Do you guys have any interest in the Langdon Wind Farm? I can't remember. Isn't that yours?
We have some interest, yeah.
How does that tie into the transmission somewhere? I see the Rugby Wind Farm. That made me think about the Langdon one.
Yeah, it's This doesn't have a laser pointer on it, does it?
Yeah.
It'd be right up here.
But that's not in any of the projects 1 through 14.
Correct.
So is that somewhere before this, or is it somehow different, or is it?
My guess is it's already included. Stuart, maybe you have an answer for that question.
I don't know that there was any specific transmission.
My recollection, this is Bruce Gerhardsen, by the way, counsel. worked on that, and it is several years ago now. My memory is that there wasn't a significant amount of interconnection cost, and to the extent there was any, it was included in the renewable rider because any interconnection associated with wind went in as a cost of that wind resource.
Okay.
But it was pretty modest, so it wouldn't show up here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Throughout the, I kind of broke the projects into that MISO cost sharing arrangement, which it kind of hits to that question on how are they, is it just a straight percentage broken down for the North Dakota portion? So we kind of have our baseline reliability projects, and that includes the Bemidji Grand Rapids projects, Fargo, Monticello, Buffalo, Castleton. And then we have MVP projects, Brookings to Hampton, Big Stone South projects, and Big Stone South to Ellendale. And then we have a few projects that are done for generation interconnection, Rugby Wind interconnection, and then the Ramsey Transformer. And actually, come to think of it, the Ramsey Transformer is partly for the Langdon Wind Farm. So that is maybe a residual effect to the Langdon Wind. And then we kind of have some other projects in the last bucket. The first project here, in each of these slides for each project, is kind of oriented the same. So, but the previously approved Bemidji to Grand Rapids project is from Bemidji area. Actually, the substation is called Wilton over the Grand Rapids area, which is called Boswell. It was approved by MISO in 2006 in their planning cycle, and it's a baseline reliability project and is eligible for regional cost sharing. Project was done to support the Red River Valley kind of voltage collapse, a reliability project. But then this also helps promote the west-east transfers or exports out of North Dakota. The project went in service in November of 2012. The investment, the total project cost was around $114 million, and of which Otter Tail was a 20% owner. And in 2014, the revenue requirement almost $900,000 to North Dakota.
And this one was a CapEx project, too?
Correct. No questions there. I'll move to the next BRP project, also a CapEx project from Fargo to Monticello, again, a previously approved project.
One quick question before you move on, Michael. Do you just have dates where these projects will be completed?
Yeah, throughout the slides, yep.
Okay.
And this one's in service.
So this one, though, like I'm talking in terms of how long customers are going to be paying for it.
Long time.
Oh, really? This rider for these projects is going to be...
The projects get spread out over their lifetime for customers.
Forever.
Yeah. At some point...
45 years.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, they'll stay in the rider until there's a general rate case, the completed projects, and then at that point they would be rolled in.
The Fargo to Monticello line, much longer, also a different voltage, the 345 kV project, so also larger in that sense electrically. 240 miles, it was approved in the MISO planning cycle in 2008. Again, is a similar reliability project, so it is eligible for regional cost sharing. Again, it supports the Red River Valley, also the exports out of North Dakota. The project is, because of its size, was broken into three different phases. The first phase is from kind of the Twin Cities area up to St. Cloud, and that portion was in service in December of 2011. And then the second phase, which is nearing completion, is from the St. Cloud area up to Alexandria, and then the final phase three portion is from Alex all the way up to Fargo to a substation called Bison. Kind of partial to the name myself.
Easier approval that way. All right. Do you know, are we done through Alex on it now?
It hasn't been energized, but they have been testing some of the Alex substation equipment.
They drove through there last weekend, and they're making good progress headed west, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is the, if I'm remembering correctly, but it is the largest project, over $600 million for the project in the entirety. Otter Tail's a little over a 10% owner, and in 2014, the North Dakota revenue requirement is a little over $3 million. The next project in this bucket, reliability project, also previously approved, is from Buffalo to Castleton on a smaller scale in relative to these other projects, of course, still substantial dollars, but it's a 115 line from Buffalo to Castleton, approximately 16 miles, and it supports the geographical area from Foreman up to Buffalo over to the Mapleton area. It's essentially loops in the Castleton substation, but it also supports the underlying system as well.
Is that the line that we had a lot of county commission and interest in?
I think there was some, but I've been on more of the technical side. I guess I'll defer it.
I just out of curiosity how that played itself out.
We had a couple of consumer calls on that one, on the sighting of it, and we didn't cite it.
We didn't cite it because it was 115, but yeah. What's the latest and greatest from the...
It's not a project I'm working on directly, but I know basically my understanding was that there was, I thought it was township, but it might have been county local siting authority through zoning type authority. And my recollection is that has been completed. I think there was some proceedings in front of either the I thought it was the township board, but it might have been a specific zoning board associated with that. I think it's done. I think it's completed.
No, we haven't heard anything about that for a few months, but yep. We heard a lot about it for a short period of time. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the line itself should be energized in the next few weeks. And then there's some underlying projects, different phases, a new transformer at Buffalo, 2014 timeframe should be in service. And then also a line upgrade from Mapleton to Cheyenne in 2015. In 2014, the revenue requirement to the North Dakota customers is close to $300,000. Now, this is kind of shifting into the MVP-type project. Previously approved, Brookings to Hampton, another very large, substantial project. 250 miles from Brookings, South Dakota, to Hampton, Minnesota. It was approved in the MISO 2011 planning cycle as a multi-value project, which is eligible for regional cost sharing. It supports load in western Minnesota, but also greatly helps generation export from the Dakotas. The project entirety is expected to be in service in late 2014. And the total project cost of about $650 million. 2014 North Dakota revenue requirements of about $250,000.
I don't know Minnesota obviously very well compared to North Dakota, but how far does east into Minnesota does Otter Tail go? On this slide here, what's the farthest? I mean, do you serve all the way over to the Helena substation as far as customers?
We don't have customers at Helena. You know, it'd be a little easier to break this out to the larger map, but
When we get to slide 15, that'll kind of show the Otter Tail service territory.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
We're a minor ownership in the project, large dollar, of course, but 4.1% owner. Another MVP project was also previously approved is the Big Stone South area. And this is, again, a 345 line, approximately 70 miles from Big Stone South down to the Brookings South Dakota substation, so this kind of takes off for that previous project left off, if you will. Also was approved in the MISO 2011 planning cycle as an MVP, and with that designation is eligible for regional cost sharing. Expected to be in service in 2017 and greatly helps generation exports from the Dakotas, but also creates a more efficient system as well. Of this project, Otter Tail is 50% owner and estimated 2014 revenue requirement of $5,000 approximately in 2014.
Jerry, is this the one that was kind of put on hold for cost? Something to do with unless we could bill it to some other project that we'd bill it back to this? I can't remember exactly what that discussion was.
I'm thinking you're remembering the ADP application for the Brookings line.
Okay, so it's not this one then. All right.
And this connects to the Brookings line. It's part of the loop from Ellendale.
Okay, thanks.
I think that's my recollection as well. Okay. Big Stone South to Ellendale is the next project. Again, a 345 kV line of approximately 165 miles between Ellendale and Big Stone, or Big Stone South, again, kind of connects to these other projects that were previously discussed. It was approved in the same MISO planning cycle and is also eligible for regional cost sharing. Same benefits to the system. Helps exports out of North Dakota, increases reliability, and also market efficiency. This project currently is around 2 years behind the previous slide of an estimated in-service date of 2019. Again, Otter Tail is a 50% owner, and the 2014 revenue requirement for North Dakota is approximately $5,000. Then we kind of have this last group of projects. They're a little smaller in dollar. Four or five of them are actually located geographically in the North Dakota footprint. Maybe I'll just point to them. But number seven is that Rugby Wind Farm. Number eight is partially due to the Langdon Wind Farm. Number nine is in Carlstead, Minnesota. It's a Cap Bank project. Number 10 is a new 41-6 delivery, a new source into the Oaks area. And number 11 is also a new source into the Hankinson area. Kind of a similar summary slide that we saw in the beginning. This kind of just breaks out these last remaining smaller dollar projects. The all have been previously approved, and I don't know how much detail we need to get into here. Certainly ask questions if you have them. A variety of different project types, a couple of them generation interconnection projects, 7 and 8. One, it's listed as MPC tariff. It's actually was studied through the MPC world instead of the MISO world, so it gets a little different name, but was due to generation interconnection at Langdon. And then the remaining three, 9 through 11, are reliability projects. Are there any further clarifying questions here? I guess I don't know if we need to run through each of the numbers.
What's the Cap Bank?
It supports voltage, makes sure we don't have a voltage collapse. In a voltage collapse scenario, voltages get so low and lights just go out. So it kind of props up the system, if you will.
Is it like a piece of equipment, a cap bank?
Yes, yep.
Oh, capacitor bank.
See, there's a
little. Now I know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I've got 10 of them at home.
Right.
It helps with that stability issue.
Yes. All right.
This slide shows our project that we're seeking approval for in 2014. It's called the NERC Alert Project. In 2010, NERC gave a recommendation to industry to identify discrepancies between design and actual field conditions. Basically, what there was a tree contact in the eastern portion of the states, and NERC reviewed it and determined, hey, we should make sure that everybody's design meets what's actually happening in the field. Over time, vegetation grows. Just countless different things change on the system. So they found it prudent and reliable to recommend industry to verify all of those conditions. So what we're finding is some of the lines where we thought we had so much capacity is maybe less, but we need that capacity for reliability purposes, so we have to go out and do a variety of different mitigation projects to increase the capacity of the line.
Like what?
Sure. So many times there's guy wires that are too close to the actual current carrying conductor, so we'll have to go put just an insulator on the guy wire, and that fairly cheap mitigation fix. Sometimes ground clearances per
any. So it's not the actual electrons flowing down the line; it's the things around there which keep the line. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So sometimes we have to raise the poles so the wire isn't so close to the ground, or move trees out of the way, or sometimes it's a building that somebody built. Or
like you're saying, there's something you could do to increase the flow of the electrons down the line. I'm like, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, they're kind of do their own thing.
Yeah, we've had a lot of pole replacements with these going on with other utilities, too.
So is Minnesota putting tree stands and telephone poles is the problem.
Yeah, certainly every utility has the same project in their forecast. The estimated costs, we're still analyzing the system, so these are kind of malleable. But right now, the best estimate is about $9.7 million, and we're estimating a 2014 revenue requirement of a little over $300,000. It's not shared through any MISO schedule, so this is entirely borne by Otter Tail ratepayers.
These are all transmission lines. It wouldn't be in the distribution lines, or does it go down to distribution lines too?
It's all transmission related. Sometimes the distribution lines get in the way, but
absolutely,
yeah.
Okay.
Is this so? It's a 2010 NERC recommendation. Is there a timeline where you have to complete these and then repeat this every so often, or is this going to be an ongoing cost, or will we pay the $9.7 million and then we're done?
There hasn't been any discussion or anything from NERC that would hint that they want this to be done semiannually or, you know, biennially or something like that. The deadline to analyze everything is the end of this year, so we're getting very close to having everything wrapped up. They kind of broke it into segments, low priority, medium priority, and high priority. So the low priority facilities were due to be analyzed end of this year. Medium priority into last year, and high priority prior year before that. So it's kind of a three-year stage in approach. But no, there hasn't been discussion about running this analysis again.
Okay. So this will be just a one-time inclusion in the ride. We won't see this again next year.
Well, it'll. The investment will be placed into the into the rider as it occurs, and just like any of the other transmission investment in any of these other lines, you know, that rate base, that asset will be part of the rider. There'll be a revenue requirement, computed off of that. It's not like it's a one-time expense type of.
Until it gets moved into base rates in a rate case.
Yep. The one thing I...
You won't be adding that much more next time.
No. Okay. No. And as Michael said, this is kind of a moving target as far as this number goes. They're still doing some assessment. I think in the initial petition, we had estimated about $9.2 million. So it's gone up a little bit. The revenue requirement is based on the $9.2 million right now. So,
and I think there were some additional complications that could result in more money later from or changes in the billing from other lines in the system in your service area that are maybe owned by NSP or a few others.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing thing.
I should point out, I mean, if part of this reason the cost estimate is continuing to move is, I mean, if we have to analyze, if we don't need the capacity on the line, we don't need to spend the money to increase the rating to have a higher capacity. So that's something that's continually being analyzed as well.
And I think you're referring to the Schedule 45, which is, you know, we could get allocated other costs from other entities if they choose, you know, that mechanism of allocation. At this point, we're not.
And COTA's in your service area, too, so
yes.
That figures in. They share lines and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
We also list a few potential future projects that we could see in the next. We don't know if this is the next year, 2 years, or what the exact timing would be. But we're anticipating a new 230 kV line from Winger to Thief River Falls, Minnesota. It's approximately 50 miles of new line, an estimated cost of about $30 million to Otter Tail, the rest being borne by MPC. It's kind of the sharing the system thing, Jerry, certainly in this area. We're estimating it to be in service approximately 2020, with permitting activities beginning in 2015 through 2018 and actual construction 2019 and 2020. We also have a 115 kV project of a little over 20 miles between Clearbrook and Solway. Also, a reliability project, approximately a little over $11 million, and estimating an in-service date of 2018 with permitting activities, light permitting activities next year until 2016, with construction to begin in 2017 and 2018. These are both Otter Tail projects with no MISO cost-sharing arrangements.
Now, do North Dakota customers pay for something like that, the Clearbrook to Solway? We have a share of that? Just because of its anything transmission that you guys...
I mean, we look at it as an entire system, regardless of, you know, whether it's in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, just like a generating plant gets allocated to our jurisdictions accordingly.
Okay.
So what's the big driver for those two projects? You said reliability, but which way? I mean, are there old lines there that aren't doing? Is Thief River Falls growing?
Load growth is in the primary Thief River? Driver. Say that again?
Load growth in Thief River? And which way the electrons going to flow? I assume south to north.
Yeah, the traditional flow is kind of a north to south and west to east, but... this project from they will flow from Winger up to Thief from kind of a south to north flow like you state, but the entire load in this pocket is growing, but the primary load growth is around that Thief River Falls area.
Okay. Is there any projects in the horizon that far out in North Dakota that we should be aware of now?
We don't see any, no.
Okay. How do you put that data together that you think you'll need something in Thief River in 2020. How do you put that together?
Yeah, NERC has standards, reliability standards that all utilities have to assess annually. So in these annual assessments, we'll see criteria violations, and then we just test various different solutions to try to mitigate those violations. And these two projects were the best projects, most economical, and also fix the concerns that came out of that analysis.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is the western edge of your service area in North Dakota, I know, being from Botten, I know you guys serve there. Mm-hmm. And do you go west, like to West Hope, or how far west do you go?
Our furthermost substation in North Dakota is Parshall.
Okay, so right in the heart of the line, if you will, of the load growth. So, I mean, have you compared that we need new lines in Parshall?
We do have a smaller project at Parshall. Even Parshall, I think most of the growth is residual from the oil fields.
The town isn't growing that much.
Right. It's more maybe housing people moving up to, busing up to Minot or, you know, something like that. It's not that direct oil boom that some of the other utilities are seeing.
Okay, because that study that took place with MDU and the co-ops, were you part of that study at all, where MDU thinks they need another 200 megawatts, give or take? Were you part of that study at all?
I guess I'm not familiar offhand. Was it a generation study?
I think so. And that's why it just strikes me.
It was demand. It was load.
They were not part of it? Wonder why you guys wouldn't be part of it, because if MDU needs more power and they're mostly inside, just something to think about, I guess.
Are you talking about the Basin one?
Yeah.
That was mostly Basin, and MDU was part of it a little bit?
Oh, their Western 345 kV plan, all the transmission being built, we've certainly been on those planning calls. FERC also has mandates that, I mean, we have to coordinate that type of investments and things like that. So I guess I didn't know if there was this 200 megawatts, I guess, never really rang a bell. But we certainly have coordinated studies in Western North Dakota.
They get to the point that you're comfortable that you're going to have enough transmission to meet the need in North Dakota in 2020.
Right.
Fair enough.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Of course, you know, things are always changing, but, right, best information today. Some other projects that are worth noting but really don't have an effect on Otter Tail ratepayers, a couple wind projects. J290, a little north of Rugby, is a project that wants to interconnect between the Rugby-Glenboro 230 line. But under the MISO constructs, all facilities for that project would be borne by the actual interconnection customer. And then also J262 and 263 is more wind being interconnected at Jamestown. And the same story there. Any upgrades for those projects would be paid for by the interconnection customer, not load or ratepayers.
Your J numbers, are those the MISO interconnection?
Yeah, exactly.
Numbers. So I'm thinking it might be the Roulette Winds project. You don't know them by name?
I don't. I got numbers in my head.
And Jerry, would you expect then that the Jamestown one is Courtney?
Yeah, and
probably.
There was another one. I don't know what that is.
Courtney sounds familiar.
So then, let's, in either of these cases, so you build it and either the wind farm owner or the utility that's going to be acquiring the power pays you to transport it across, so you don't have to build anything into your costs for doing this? Or is that spread out over such a long time that you need money from your rate payers to
Build
it in the first place, but they'll get their money back later, or what?
Yeah, that used to be the MISO construct, but we're entirely made whole. Any upgrades we need to make on our system is entirely paid for by the interconnection customers. Now, that is a change since Order 1000. I can't remember how many years ago, but it used to have a little different sharing construct, but that's no longer the case.
Yeah, there were negotiations that went on in RECB process in MISO, and it culminated with a changing of the way things are done and the MVP projects moving into the picture.
Okay, so then if these other projects that are yours or partially yours drive up costs for your ratepayers, if this one, if you're completely reimbursed, you should make some money on it, so doesn't that drive down the costs for some ratepayers?
It's complicated, too.
I certainly can't answer that question, but maybe Stuart has some thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, for those that are borne by the, I mean, there isn't any capital investment if the interconnection customer is paying for. I mean, it's just part of that customer's cost to interconnect that.
If I remember right, there was a payment scheme of some kind or other where the interconnection customer is paid back for the investment and different methods of doing that. I can't remember how it all went, but
so you don't make any money on it?
Not on that, no.
The thing is designed for the interconnection customer to pay it up front, and then they pay a transmission rate too that gets mixed in there.
Yeah.
And so their amount of money that they paid is used to credit against their transmission charges. And I'm doing this from memory. It's been a long time since I looked at this, but it's something along those lines.
Well, it seems like there should be some return, but
yeah. Anyway, the idea was
drag out the whole thing, but
the idea was that the customer, if he comes online, is coming online and the upgrades are getting done, that he doesn't disappear then and the utility gets stuck with the upgrades.
Yeah. You know, any revenues that we would receive through MISO, you know, would get credited back to the customers. So there is a benefit in those projects that if there is a MISO revenue stream and there has been an investment in transmission that Otter Tail has made that benefits the customers, the revenues that are coming back would benefit the ratepayers.
Okay, thank you.
If there's no other questions for me, I'll turn it over to Stuart here in the last couple slides. Looks like it turned your pointer off here.
Yeah, this slide we just wanted to highlight a few of the components of the transmission rider mechanism. As indicated in the first point there, you know, the Otter Tail's rider was approved back in 2012 in April, with the initial rates going into effect May 1 of 2012. We did our first update, which was filed September of that year, and that update was approved just about a year ago on the 12th of December. And so right now we're looking at it's the second update to the rider and the mechanism. It's important to note, you know, that really only the investments and Schedule 26 expenses that are designated and attributable to North Dakota ratepayers are being included in the rider. As Michael talked about, you know, Otter Tail has invested in a lot of those revenue sharing projects more than what would be required to serve the needs of the retail ratepayers, but only those costs are included here. The mechanism, as provided by statute, does allow a current return while the projects are under construction. In the case, as I mentioned earlier, where there is a revenue stream coming in on the regional cost share projects, those revenues are credited to the customer in proportion to the investment level that is attributable to the retail load. And so what that does in the rider is reduces the overall revenue requirement that the ratepayers are paying. And then the last point, the way the rider mechanism works as we look out to 2014 and develop the rate, that rate is based on forecast, spend, investment, collections. In each year, as it is updated, we replace those forecasts with the actuals that are incurred, whether it's the revenues or the costs. And there's a true-up mechanism that's built into the tracker so that if there's any over-collection, that's provided back to the customer. At the end of the day, the customer ends up only paying what the actual costs are. And so that's kind of the basic, you know, nuts and bolts of the mechanism and how it works. and really...
Question on those.
Yep.
Before you leave that slide.
Yep.
The third bullet, what's Schedule 26?
If Otter Tail hadn't invested in any of these projects, these MISO regional cost share projects, but they were still built, Otter Tail would be allocated a portion of those costs, and we would need to, you know, pay them, and we would pass those on to the ratepayers. And so it's the costs not only associated with these investments, but any investments within the MISO footprint that they deem to have a benefit coming back to Otter Tail's customers, there's a cost that's associated with those investments.
So it's a MISO schedule?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And then the second sentence there is curious to me. Excludes OTP investment in regional cost-sharing projects, which is in excess of what's needed to serve OTP customers.
Right.
Why would you be investing more than what you need to serve your customers?
That was a management decision that Otter Tail, you know, made, you know, to choose to invest, you know, in a certain amount in these projects, you know, based on the MISO tariff and the cost sharing mechanisms and the associated returns with those investments. So in some cases, you know, where we've maybe invested 20% in the project, the retail ratepayers are really only responsible for, you know, 13 or 15% or something like that. And so it's that portion of the investment that is
okay,
included in the rider and charged back to the ratepayers.
So those additional costs are absorbed by your investors?
Yes. They're basically handled outside of...
Mm. Would it be fair to say the rest of MISO?
Yeah. The revenue... Yeah. I mean, the investment, we include only the investment attributable to the load. If there is a revenue stream coming in through the MISO tariff that we receive, that gets credited back into the rider, reducing the revenue requirement
mm-hmm.
that's provided or that the ratepayers in North Dakota are responsible for. I'm not sure if I...
Yeah, that seems separate to me than this OTP investment in regional cost-sharing projects, which is in excess of what's needed to serve.
It kind of went back to the original, when the mechanism, the rider was originally established, that even though Otter Tail was investing more than what retail ratepayers needed, in a sense, the prudent thing was for only the ratepayers to pay really what was to their benefit and mm-hmm. and there's a risk associated with that they didn't want to pass on to the ratepayers. Bruce,
can I just raise one illustrative point? You know, one way to think about it too is that when they decided to do the regional cost allocation, you know, to get all of the utilities to invest the exact amount of what they were going to be allocated, you would have required all MISO members to invest in all MISO allocated projects. So you'd have, I don't know how many MISO members are there, Jerry, you know, dozens upon dozens. And so what occurs is, you know, two or three or four, or, you know, have typically done the investment, and then they get recoupment through the FERC mechanism. So that's why you end up with those two or three or four are going to end up, by the consequence of that, naturally having more investment than what's allocated to their retail customers.
You get paid back by other customers.
Correct.
Okay.
Long
I get it.
Answer.
Yeah. Makes sense.
If you remember that slide for the Big Stone Ellendale line, there was like $300 million for that line, and our share of it is only $5,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 1.2 7% or something like that that gets allocated to the to the ratepayers. Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions on that slide? Or? And so I guess, you know, really with regard to this docket in terms of what Otter Tail's request is you know, basically to approve the annual update to the costs and collections associated with those projects that have been previously approved for the rider, requesting the inclusion of that NERC compliance project, which Michael went through. And then I guess the last point, just to clarify, it says here new rates effective February 1. When we calculated the initial petition or the application, we had assumed a, you know, a January 1 implementation rate. So that's the rates based on Jerry's memo would assume that it went into effect then. I don't know if that's going to quite work, and we would, you know, we can adjust those or recalculate them if it gets delayed, you know, back
we
a month.
We did talk about possibility for a special meeting in late December to get this approved to implement January 1.
When's the date again, Jerry? Do we have to be later then?
They would like it January 1. I don't know
the date that we could have the meeting on.
The notice was...
When is it?
23rd.
December,
so okay.
Yeah.
So it would be that week between Christmas and New Year's.
I'm free December 24th at about 4. But yeah, that sounds reasonable. So you haven't heard anything...
Did you get a bison game that day?
No, that's the week off. So the large industrial group hasn't talked to you guys at all about this, or you've heard nothing from them? They've intervened in your cases before.
They were in this when we... When
it initially, I believe, yeah, when it was
so
first.
The underlying tariff, they were in it, and actually their sticking point was the rate. Notice, for large general service, it's on a KW charge instead of a KWH charge.
Right. Yep.
And so that's what they wanted.
So they're still happy because they got that in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, would you offer this up as your testimony?
Yes.
And we'd be happy to receive it. Okay, I don't have any more questions. I don't know if Randy or Julie.
Not Anna.
Julie?
No, thank you. It's good.
Okay, Jerry, do you want to go through your memo, or are you comfortable letting us read it?
It's pretty much been gone through, I think, with the slideshow.
Okay.
Staff recommendation is approval on it.
All right.
And unless there's questions on anything... Anyhow, are there anything you want me to talk about more?
I don't have any particular ones. Julie, Randy? Okay. Well, going once, going twice.
I just want to offer just appreciation for Jerry and working with him through this project as well. So thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Fair enough. We'll go ahead and close the informal on case number P.